So hi everyone, it's Flora here today with another episode of Brain and Butter. In this podcast, we aim to translate neuroscientific and psychological ideas into tangible short bits of information that anyone can digest. In today's conversation, we explore the fascinating intersection of architecture and the human mind. We delve into the ways in which architecture can shape our cognitive processes and hence our well-being and contribute to our sense of identity and memory. Drawing from principles of psychology, neuroscience, and cognitive science, we discuss topics such as embodied cognition, user-centered design, and the influence of the built environment on our emotions and behavior. Our expert today is Lisbeth van der Pol, who is the co-founder of the Dutch architecture company Doc Architecten. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here today, Lisbeth. Very welcome.
Thank you so much.
So when I read about your work and your method towards architecture, I read that you make watercolor paintings of each building, and you have now around 40 completed buildings. And I was wondering how, what factors do you include when you depict the character of a building or a to-be-built building?
I use watercolors indeed to search for the character of the buildings. I do believe that buildings, as they stand in our public space, are somehow some characters. You could see them as a sort of almost persons. Mm-hmm. And if you look at buildings in that way, the search for the character of that building is done on a very personal way. And instead of having 3D drawings all the time, which are, of course, overcorrect and overrealistic, I rather use, and I also invite people to use a watercolor, because watercolor is very transparent, is very fluid, and so the visions from you to the building is still undergoing many changes while drawing. As making a watercolor, an aquarelle, takes a lot of layers and takes a lot of time. All the time and all the layers makes you think, is this the proper character? Is this the person, the almost person, I'd like to add to our public space? So that's why I do it.
Super interesting. And when you have a project in mind, what characteristics of the building do you take into account? Like, how do you depict the character of the building?
That's, of course, quite a marvelous and wonderful process. And actually, I don't know step by step how it works. I only know that when you go to a certain area, you somehow feel that what is needed. And when you read through the demands, the lists of demands of the building, they will never ask for a characteristic building. But you can read through and you can see, okay, if this is social housing, it's going to be put here. And that corner might be in a surrounding with a mill, or there might be in the surrounding a lot of other buildings. How does this urbanistically work? So there are so many aspects, and also the client himself or herself has a lot of input on that wish. And in our office, Doc Architecten, we used to work in workshops. So mm-hmm. we gather together with everybody, even the administration department, mm-hmm. and we try to draw and think about it very freely in the beginning of the process. Mm. So those are all aspects that sort of start the idea of character of building.
Yeah, because I believe that every neighborhood and every building has a cultural heritage. You need to consider the neighborhood, you need to consider the people who live in there. And I can imagine that in some projects, for example, there are a lot of new developments also here in the Netherlands where they try to improve the view on the area which is not as popular or doesn't have such a good reputation, and there are new developments coming up in the area, but then sometimes there is one building completely standalone from the whole neighborhood and it doesn't really take into all the like the aspects of cultural heritage and the people who actually live there. So I think it's really important that you tried to embed it in the neighborhood, and I just like, okay, we're gonna have a new building here, and there's the building, but it separates from all the rest around it.
Yeah, that's correct. There are so many things people don't know when they go to a certain place where you have to put a new building. But what we do know, if you go for a search into history, you will find that there is no spot on earth that doesn't have a history. And that might even be a building, a built history. It might be only a nature surrounding, but it also might be an industrial history. Or a town has a certain industrial heritage as a sort of memory. And that collective memory of people sometimes is not really on the forehand of the thinking. Yeah. But when you just put it up and make it a part of your drawing and part of your design, you will notice that people might love it even earlier, as that they somehow recognize that you put in some of the history of the spot that is really part of the earth, and they will recognize this and they start to love it. And you might think, why is it important that you love a building? It's only for use. Then I think it's not. I think it's very important. We cannot change history with our buildings. We cannot take away the fear of war. We cannot take away the divorce with our buildings. But we are capable of making living far more light and far more emotional when we put in emotional ingredients in our design. That's where I stand for.
That's really, really nice. And do you have specific design principles that you put into buildings or the design of the building to trigger specific behaviors or emotions?
Yeah, very little, but one of them is that we should make characters. And a character doesn't have anything to do with aesthetics. Most people are characters, but they're not so very aesthetic. They're just beautiful because of their being.
Yeah.
And might even say that they're beautiful because of the specifications that make them special.
Yeah.
And so their nose is not on perfectly in the middle, or the lips are big or just small, or the eyebrows are, or they have a back that is bowed on a very emotional way. And most of your friends, if you look in yourself and you think about the people around you, that it is those specialized things, those odd things of the looks that do appeal.
Yeah.
And the emotional attachment to persons is the same like in buildings. So we should not make buildings only perfect. We should search for imperfection, and we should search for specific characteristics. A building can be tough, or a building can be vulnerable, or a building can be womanly or feminine, or it can be very complex. And so we have all sorts of characteristics that can appeal and do appeal, but you do need a character.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I guess also the character really depends on what kind of use the building's going to have. So if it's a building for like an office building, then also with the layout and with the colors, you can play around at how to improve, for example, learning. Or I read a study where they show that nowadays biophilic design is very popular, so including nature elements or even just like garden view to the buildings. And they show that, for example, hospitals really benefit from it because patients' recovery time was decreased when they included these nature elements and they incorporated it. And also with the colors and materials, they try to use this, for example, wood to increase like the coolness or like the hominess, because if you have a hospital with very rigid concrete building only with white and no warm colors that kind of induce compassion or liveliness, then of course it's going to impact the people who live in there. So I think there's a lot of small elements that you can add to the buildings also based on, okay, to whom do you build it to, and what's going to be the purpose of it. And then I wonder, do you think, because you said buildings should or doesn't have to be aesthetic, but then you think that functionality is more important than aesthetic? Also, when I look through your designs, I do feel that they are very aesthetic as well. How do you balance the need for functionality and an aesthetics?
First about the user, it's of course extremely important what kind of atmosphere you put for user. And I'd like to give the example of a school, an elementary school. We might think that children are small and that you have to make a school small, but you might as well think differently. Yeah, if you put very high, 4 meter high classrooms for children, and you make them out of wood, which smells good and it looks good, and you could even make a drawing on a beam, and the highness make them stand upright and feel adult. I think that sort of, so you can think about the user as smooth, but you can also think about the user as someone who wants to get somewhere, like a child. Children mostly want to get older and bigger. And so if you treat them like almost adults and give them the space they need, that they can stand up and feel respected, I do think that is important. And then at the same time, you can organize the school in different areas for different ages that really support that feelings of growing and learning. And so you make more safe space where you can learn. And if you make that space green, they might recognize nature in it. And you are right that nature and everything to do with green and biodiversity is now something we need to do. And I think architecture can make big steps in that sort of approach. We can lead the way. For example, we designed a housing building in which you said, okay, the human being is not the first to gain here. The first is green, the second is animal, third is human being. So we first made a big rock. And we let that rock grow with green and with animals, without any people. And then one side of the rock we made more or less slick and flat. Mm-hmm. And in that area we made apartments to live in. Mm-hmm. And of course, I think in that way, architecture can lead the way. And you can say, okay, we should absolutely step back a little bit and first make nature, and then make housing, not the other way around. Those things are very extreme to be built. Yeah. And the funny thing is, coming back to these watercolors, you can draw them easily, and they appeal to many, many people. And it might be that we are not yet there to put this into realization.
Yeah.
But the thinking of that way of approach is already started.
Yeah, and I also feel that you are like users really do seek and do really want to be surrounded by nature, also like daylight. Like I think of his buildings built in the 80s, 70s, it was very functional. Like, okay, we need a building, we need rooms, and that's it. So gray, like just desks after each other, and it's very unappealing. And of course, productivity or, I don't know, engagement to be in that space is not really inviting. So if you have different stimulations like tactile or like visual or colors, it's way more inviting, and your cognitive performance also going to be enhanced because you're stimulated. I don't say that office buildings should look like playgrounds, but if it's stimulating and inviting, when you said the example with the classroom, I also read that when office buildings have high ceiling, it enhances creativity. And open floor plans enhance like team building. But if you, for example, build for a finance department, it might be better to have like quiet spaces where they can focus, and when you really need to pay attention to details, and then maybe a lower ceiling is better. So I think it's really important, yeah, to incorporate this. Yeah, buildings are not just buildings. We spend so much time of our life inside. So if it's only functional, then there is no joy, there is no pleasure out of it to be in those spaces.
That's right. The pleasure can be in the extremes. And so it is extreme to make a classroom of 4 meters high, but then it gives you the space to make a sort of small area in between. In it, there's some sort of balcony size that is so small that an adult person cannot exist there because it's too low. But children have there some sort of schnoozel. And we did that in all the classrooms. We put in a little staircase only for children. And then we put the schnoozel area. So you have, at one time, you have this huge world where you can exercise you being an adult. At the same time, the one that you can also step back and little go back into the smaller space and schnoozel a bit. And both of those sizes were extreme.
Yeah.
And they both work. Yeah. And the in-between, which might be the optimum in terms of money and everything, doesn't give that possibilities. So I do believe in design on the edges. And so don't stay in the middle.
Right, don't just do the bare minimum.
Yeah.
There's a study when they put rodents into different cages. And the one where they had a lot of places to discover, a lot of plays, like also these, it reminded me of what she said, because they had this little terrace to go off and like do a play. And that was a very basic one with like barely anything to move around. And they also showed that even like their brain plasticity, so the more neurons were forming. So it's like cognitively good to have, like, it's not only like, okay, it looks better and it's just a hype. It's really beneficial for human beings. And especially in children and classrooms, I think it's so important to consider that factor as well.
And that's how you can explain that designing for the extreme has a certain purpose. And of course, that does work on ourselves as well. And so we don't like to be in the middle, just being somewhere which is just good enough. That is not good enough.
Completely. And you mentioned earlier that when you make the plans for these buildings, you also involve like the people and the whole team. How does that work? Like, do you get input from future residents, or how does that collaboration work?
And the workshop we held in Dokarchitecten, we do with ourselves, with our own teams.
Yeah.
But we usually invite other architects' office, or we invite people who are going to in which neighborhoods the buildings are going to be. We invite them also for a workshop, but we find out that the workshops we do ourselves are of course extremely filled and loaded with energy and fantasy, which is very nice. And for people to reach that openness in fantasy in general is very difficult.
Yeah.
So it takes a little bit more time and explanation and models. So we make real models to bring people's fantasy to a life, but they are hesitating a little bit. So then what we do, we make big panels and we start to make discussions, because discussions is far more easy for people. So we explain with the panels, we explain what is going on, and then we ask them to react on that, or with a new paper or with real time.
Yeah.
And that does work very good. And what I find is even though we think that things that are extreme, are full of fantasy, are a bit out of our logical thinking, we do expect that people don't like that. We experience that people do like that very much, that it lifts them up to a certain level of joy.
Yeah, because I can imagine that then it's not just a building, just another building, but it's like it's something special. It's like, oh, I'm excited to go to the building because it's something that I haven't seen before. And it's also surrounded by, my needs. And the architects really took into account that, okay, it's not only we're going to build something and it's going to be done quick and easy, but they considered my perspective. So I would also be more engaged in the building myself because... it's something for me.
And then not only floor plan is counting, but also the how much history did you put in, and did you translate the history into something new? If you put history in it and you just don't do anything with it, it doesn't work either. So yeah. We have to translate it into something new. But people recognize if they feel that you do with respect act on that spot, with respect act on their history in their surrounding, then yeah, you encounter a lot of respect.
Yeah, and I think it was a positive response.
We once had inspiration a transformer, which is actually a toy for children.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we took that as an inspiration for a huge building, 70 meters high.
Yeah.
And they recognized it as well. And everybody has, many people have children with a transporter. And so if you're open about it and you say, okay, this was the inspiration, and we think on this place, which is a rough place, and it can have the size of this building, and it can have the identity of a shooting transformer. So finally it was built and people love it.
Mm.
Yeah. So you never underestimate. That's what I think. Never underestimate how people recognize and like the fact that you took something as an inspiration point.
Yeah, for sure. And I think also with the liking part of a building, that's called embodied cognition, that we really interact with the environment through our senses. So like when you navigate into space and you find it's very difficult to get around the building, like you always get lost, or the staircase doesn't make sense, or the spatial flow is very strange, you're not going to like the building because it doesn't help you with your navigation and you cannot get around. And yeah, maybe aesthetic is put first, but then functionality is not considered. But then the user is not considered. And then you just don't like the building because it's confusing, or it puts you so much cognitive load that it's like, okay, I get lost here. Every time I come here, I don't, even if it's a beautiful building, I just don't like it because it's confusing. So
that's correct. And that has to do with your skills as an architect, that you have to, of course, the program comes first. And mm-hmm. so when you try to make a scheme out of the program, and you have to, and that's also where the aquarelles and the watercolor come into the story. I always draw same time the floor plan and the visuality of the building. And there you see, they have to come together like a sort of logical system that can be understood at once when you enter the building.
And do you have any difficulties or sometimes challenges when you sketch for these buildings with character, or when you try to incorporate all these different elements to make the building like give it a personality?
No, but the difficulty you face as an architect has to do with time and money most of the time. So when you just listen so carefully to the user, and listen carefully to the client, and you listen carefully to the history of the spot, you can always come to one conclusion that fits most at that spot. So that does work. But what does not work always is that has to be for less money. For example, when you go really over the highest point you can do, so when it's really very extreme, then you might encounter a lot of counter pressure from committees that are involved into urban borders, etc. I should call it challenges more than difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
You can always overcome them when the character of the building is a good character. It can add a lot of, it can have a lot of changes in itself.
Yeah.
That is also the case. So you can manipulate a lot.
Yeah, and I do hope that municipalities and those committees do recognize that, it might be more work or more.
And sometimes the way you put it. I once made a parking garage, and actually it looks like a dream of a 1001 nights, very very Middle East dream. So we went to the municipality and said, okay, it's in the Silk Route, the 17th century, caravans meet each other in a place. They were kept in a caravanserai.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually where they left their things from the camels. But that's where they start to talk to each other, because they had been had long journeys, and they meet each other and they start business together, and they start universities together, they start schools together, they start markets together. Actually, they start society, starting a city. So when you compare this to the cars, we might say that we come and drive with our things to the parking garage. Mm-hmm. We just leave our things over there. We can meet each other. We can start to talk to each other and exchange experiences and talks about our journeys. We can start universities. We can start learning in the parking garage. And that's where we said, okay, our parking garage is a caravanserai for cars. And that's why it looks like a dream of a 1001 night. And then everybody was applauding, and everybody loved the design. And it is a parking garage. So you can, it's also the, how do you imagine how, what kind of fantasy you have with the building, and the way you approach it might help in the way you communicate with your client and municipalities about it. That does help a lot.
Yeah, and I do feel that in modern society, especially like in urban areas, like loneliness or like the lack of interaction is such a big issue. And if you create spaces, if you design the space to invite people to interact and not just be in their own world and not know their neighbors, it's also, it's a huge advantage, because then you can chat, you can build things together, and you get to know each other, and that already adds to the you use that space for convenience, but then it can be a meeting point, it can be a social interaction space where you can enjoy your time with your neighbors, and it's not that anonymous anymore. So I think that's really important and great.
So that is a character, and it's very specific to look at, and people love it, and because they feel the story. The story is not written on the facade, but it's actually in the building.
It's felt. Well, thank you, Lisbeth. It was a very, very nice conversation, and I think as a takeaway message, and also as a future hope, I really hope that architects and municipalities will embrace and encourage to build buildings with a character, with respect to the local space, to history, to the people themselves, because I think that will make the living of urban cities way better and way more enjoyable. So thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and expertise today with us.
Thank you so much for having this podcast.